that condition, you have nothing to fear from a Snow. I give her a nod, and nothing more. I hope you forget that, after some time passes, she murmured, low and menacing. I hope you trespass and give me an excuse to finish this. Please do. She leaves, taking Froggera with her, and Briett comes over, her helmet off now that danger is past.
Ireland is safe, and thus is Tiernanog. I know you do not feel it now, and may resent my part in this, Sheehan, but know this, I believe you have done much good today. If I may grant you a boon in the future, call on me.
I saw her hesitate, on the verge of saying more, but she decided against it with a tiny shake of her head and said farewell. With her exit, I was left in a circle of Norse, and they simply stared at me. I rolled to my left and levered myself up to my feet. I felt a bit lightheaded, and I paused a moment for the spinning in my head to subside before taking careful steps over to Thor and Odin. I nodded at them, and they returned the gesture, waiting for me to say something. I started with the red-bearded Thunder God.
You're Thor?
Yes.
So who was it that Leif Helgerson killed with Morlta?
Thor snorted in amusement.
Oh, that was me.
He grinned briefly and then it melted away, replaced by chagrin at the memory.
That was the old me, who had been bound by the prophecy of the Norns regarding Ragnarok. I lost my way while they lived. Over the centuries, I became corrupted, thinking that there would be no consequences for my behavior, until the day I met Jormungandr. That is the true poison of prophecy and destiny. The implication that you are somehow not responsible for your actions. But I was wrong, for there were consequences, weren't there? Indeed, I was justly brought to account by those I had wronged. And do you know what is miraculous about that? I'm glad. I'm grateful. I am manifest again thanks to those who still worship me, and I find it is a new age of humanity, more hopeful than before. I'm remembering what it means to be good. I have this same hope for you, Druid. For now you are being brought to account, and it may serve to refresh your perspective.
Or turn me bitter and vengeful.
Thor wagged his head, admitting the possibility, then chucked his chin at the still form of Loki.
He was bitter and vengeful.
Point taken. What about Heimdall and Freyr and the others?
There is hope that they will receive enough worship to manifest again. But at present they remain memories. And for my part, I bear you no ill will. Odin does not agree, but I think you did me a favor. Perhaps, in time, you will see we have done you one.
Perhaps.
I'm glad we could talk. But there is still much for me to do. So, if you will excuse me.
He strode to his chariot and took off to the north after the Draugar, leaving me with Odin and Frick and the Valkyries. Odin watched him go, and then his eye fixed on me.
I am not of Thor's mind, Druid. I still bear you plenty of ill will. I rather hoped you would die in battle.
Yes, you mentioned such a hope to me before. Frick said nothing, but the expression on her face communicated plenty. She agreed with Odin.
I will content myself with knowing that you are miserable, and hopefully far away from here. Where is it you wish to go?
The eastern coast of Tasmania, if you wouldn't mind. To the east of a town called Tryabunna, Okehampton Bay. I'd like my hounds brought to me there, Oberon and Starbuck.
By your means. Let us go, for I have other work to do. But I want those cookies. You joined the pool, did you not?
I ground my teeth. I did.
Excellent. I will let you know where to send the cookies here on Midgard. I want some of us.
Of course. I'll see to it. We don't speak as I trail behind him and Frick to the nearest piece of unspoiled land. They will need that to summon Bifrost. They were mounted, but didn't offer me a ride. I saw Valkyries off to the right, capturing a wounded Garm in a net. He survived then. Good. Part of the golf course had withered and died from the drain of the portal, and I had to trudge across it. Is the portal to hell still open? I asked them, since I couldn't feel the earth's energy under my feet.
No,
Odin replied.
It closed once Loki died.
Perhaps Grániwil would see to mending the land. She would have to see to quite a bit, I supposed, without my help. The reconnection of Gaia underneath my heel was all too brief, because Odin summoned Bifrost immediately, and then we traveled in a starry, furred space between planes until Odin delivered me to the northern beach of Okehampton Bay. I gave him instructions on how to find my cabin and which hounds were the ones to bring me, and then I was alone in the darkness. It was that oddly timeless time between midnight and dawn in Tasmania, when the absence of light and activity suggests that the world may have stopped moving. I remained standing, but reconnected with the Tasmanian elemental and asked for his aid in healing my stump. Grániwil had stopped the bleeding, but the wound was still open and susceptible to infection, besides being quite painful. Relief washed over me in one sense, but in another the pain only increased, as I felt the accelerated growth of new skin smoothing over the place where my arm used to be. I felt so off balance and unmoored. Alive, but unable to think what I should do next. We seldom recognize where the chapters of our lives begin and end until we are gifted the benediction of hindsight. Our loves, our triumphs, our tragedies, they do not exist unless we endure long enough to label them so. I'm not sure if I have accomplished much else, but I have at least survived long enough to exult and mourn, to cherish my victories and regret my mistakes. Both are legion. I think surviving Ragnarok and getting the gods to leave me alone should be counted somehow as a victory. It just doesn't feel like one right now, because by losing a large part of my connection to Gaia, I've lost, well, too much. Maybe that will change with time. But time is a way of passing slowly when you're suffering. I spent an uncounted span in the darkness, listening to the waves lap against the beach, and thought perhaps the night would never end, until the sky grayed with the approaching dawn. That's when the light of Bifrost returned, and two dogs bounded off it to land on the beach. Odin did not descend to chat, which suited me fine.
Agakis, you made it!
Oberon shouted in my head as he galloped my way.
Hi, Atticus! Good human!
Starbuck added. Most of me made it, yeah, I said. Careful now, don't jump on me. My balance isn't so good yet.
Whoa! Suffering cats, Atticus! What happened to your arm?
It's gone, I told him. But the world is safe. At least for a little while. At least from Loki. There were still literal fires to put out, no doubt, and there would be plenty of questions asked by most of humanity and no satisfactory answers for them. They would have to learn to live with the mystery and rebuild what was destroyed, while I would have to solve the mystery of how to rebuild my life.
Safe, except from squirrels, you mean?
Right, except from squirrels. That threat continues to hang over us all.
So what happened?
I sighed. Would it be all right if I shared that with you later? I have a lot to process, and I think I want to write it all down, with my left hand, which should be an adventure.
Oh, sure! That would be fine! What do you want to do now?
I think I'd like to have something to eat and drink.
You always have the best ideas, Atticus! Yes, food!
Starbuck said. Come on, then. Town's to the west. We live here now. Even though we don't have a place to live yet, and we need to get ourselves situated. But first, as a matter of principle, breakfast.
Yes! Principles are important!
Indeed they are. I think it's past time for me to examine mine. But breakfast first, at least, is rock solid. Let's go. Dogs, I think, might be more important than principles. They provide love and loyalty when you need them the most. Chapter 26. With the help of the Tasmanian elemental, I find Atticus at a tea house in Triobunna, painted yellow with green trim and potted flowers all about the porch. He and the hounds are on that porch, though he's sitting on the edge of it with his bare feet resting in the dirt rather than sitting in their wicker outdoor seating. He still has plenty of healing to do, and he looks rough. He's discarded the cuirass he'd scavenged from the field, but the shirt he wore underneath is torn and bloodstained down his right side. He's still wearing an armor skirt of hardened leather strips, though, and I'm sure he looks less than sane to modern eyes. I'm surprised the teahouse served him like that. He looks tired and miserable as I approach, and his face offers no smile of relief or welcome, but the hounds wag their tails. I let the duffel bag I'm carrying slip off my shoulder. Hi. I brought you some fresh clothes and things. New prepaid phone, your ID and credit cards, Aussie cash, that kind of thing. Thanks, he says. Odin told you where I was? Yeah. Mind grabbing a shirt out of the bag for me? Lady in the tea house almost called an ambulance when she saw this. Sure. He peels his blood-soaked shirt off over his head and puts on the fresh one I hand him, and he does so with only a little awkwardness. He must have those nerve endings locked down tight. I'm scared about what comes next as I sit down on the porch with him, feet in the dirt. So, hold on a second. Oberon, would you and Starbuck mind heading around to the back and investigating some shrubbery or something? We need to talk in private. Just holler if anyone gives you any trouble. The hounds oblige him and trot around the corner of the house, and I grow suspicious. You already know why I'm here? Yes, but it wasn't any kind of divination, if that's what you're thinking. Telling Odin to drop me off anywhere but home was a pretty big hint. Bringing me my ID and some clothes was another. I wince and suck my teeth. I hadn't realized I'd telegraphed it so plainly. Oh, yeah. Sorry. But go ahead. Say it. I take a deep breath and let it out. Well, I want you to know I'd already made up my mind about this before we got interrupted by the Norse. I mean, obviously you're already having the worst day ever, and I'm really not trying to pile on, but it won't be less true later. And after hearing what you did to Freya? Gods, Atticus, I know where she's coming from. I want to hit you myself. I can't believe you did that. It just confirms what I was already feeling. I think we should go our separate ways. Because you made a decision for me, sending me to Taiwan like that, and it doesn't matter if you thought it was for my own good. I can't live in this situation where I have to wonder if you're manipulating things behind my back. I know you're not the only one doing it, either. Obviously, Bria thinks it's fine and flittish, too. Well, it's not. I am simply done with all that. I'm nobody's chess piece. My throat dries up suddenly as I see a tear leaking out of the edge of Atticus's eye, trailing toward his jaw. I continue in a calmer voice, since I've gotten a little worked up. I'm obviously grateful for all you've done for me, and I owe you everything. If you ever need me, I will be there. But this, us, it needs to end. He nods, and his voice is a tightly controlled rasp. First, I am sorry, Granuel. I was wrong. And second, I understand your decision and do not blame you. Clearly, this is my time to go off to a corner of the world and think about what I've done. May I ask about your plans regarding the cabin?
Oh, yes.
Well, I really can't leave the cabin now with Orla just having her pups. We need 3 months to get them weaned and then we'll be out. Can you give me that? Not a problem. I can give you longer if you want. But when you're ready to vacate, if you'd let me know, please. I'd like to sell it.
Of course.
He's making this easy for me. Do you need me to bring you anything else? No. The clothes and the basic needs of modern commerce are all here. Thanks. If I think of anything, I'll give you a call.
Okay, then. I get to my feet,
a bit disoriented to be walking away from someone who's been a huge part of my life to this point. It's necessary, though. There's an open road before me, and I want to see where it goes. Goodbye for now. I hope that after all of this, well, may harmony find you. He replies in kind, and I take my leave, intending to return to the cabin in Oregon for some sleep and a cuddle with Orla. I hope Harmony does find us both, though it will have to find us in different places for a while. I will finish up my studies in Poland while Orla is nursing, and we'll find those puppies a good home somewhere, if not with Owens Grove, then with some other lucky people. I think Orla and I will go to Taiwan after that, to discover how we may both learn and grow. I would first like to learn how that monkey in Wukong's shop knew my time to be sorry would be coming soon, for I am very sorry. This is not the future I had been contemplating a month ago. Perhaps Atticus and I will be together again, and perhaps we won't, remaining nothing more than colleagues of a sort. I write this, knowing full well he'll read it. He knows from experience that attraction is an alchemy of chemicals and circumstance and ever-shifting emotions, and they may or may not align and ignite again for us at some point in the future. We have a lot of it in front of us. It's been good to review how we got here. All I can conclude, however, is that he's given me an extraordinary life, and he's already lived one. Despite that, he remains a work in progress, and so do I. So do we all, for that matter. In one regard, I am eternally content. I know he and I will always love Gaia, both together and apart.
Chapter 27.
Owen? Owen, wake up. You have to see this.
I see what? Greta's standing over me, and there's sunlight streaming through the window.
People trying to figure out what happened yesterday. The news is hilarious.
News? Ugh.
Plus, your sloth looks like she's missing you, so get up.
Oh, shite! Slow-mo! That cleared me head quick. Is she all right?
Seems like it, but it's hard to tell. Is she gonna stick around?
I'm not sure. Hey, what do you think of the apprentices having wolfhound puppies? Granuel's hound had 6, and they'd like to give them to us. Will the pack be all right with that? Greta flinched.
That's a lot of number one and number two.
We've got a lot of land, and we can tell them to go outside. Instant training, the druid way. Me love considers it and shrugs.
Sure, why not? I mean, run it by the parents first. But if one says no, then it's no for all of them. Can't have one being left out. But come on, now, you gotta see this.
The news isn't what I'd call hilarious. Earthquakes in Bavaria, animals killing people in Peru, bizarre sightings of demons and flying monkeys in Taiwan, conflicts between strange figures in most every country, with eyewitnesses claiming to see gods and other supernatural creatures in the flesh. Lots of collateral damage. And over all of it, fires to put out around the world as a result of a singular explosion in Sweden. What Greta finds amusing is how they keep bringing on experts to say they don't know what's going on and nothing makes sense.
We could have walked downtown and shifted into wolves right in front of everybody yesterday, she says, and it wouldn't even have made the news today.
Is there a fire near here? I ask. If there is, I'd like to help put it out. That might be the best use of the next few days or weeks, putting out fires, since they obviously do tremendous damage, but can impact smaller ecosystems disproportionately.
I'll switch to the local news. And don't worry about the kids, they're out with their parents in town right now. Wanted to give you a chance to sleep.
Thanks. I'll check in with Shlomo. I pour a cup of coffee in the kitchen, and then use that connection I forged yesterday to send messages of happiness and welcome and an inquiry into her health. The equivalent of smiling and asking, how's me favorite troth this morning? Her answer comes quick, and then I'm smiling for real as I step outside, steam and mug in hand.
Hi, Oaken! I am kinda cold and dry and hungry for fresh leaves. But your tiny humans are great. They wanna be druids of Gaia like you?
Druids of Gaia, yes.
Oh, yeah. I thought maybe I wasn't saying that right. Actual words are hard. Pictures and feelings are better. Are you still in the house?
Just came out to join ye.
I am in a tree nearby. And did I mention it is cold and dry here?
You did. We should probably get you back to your jungle and find ye a nice tree to dangle from. One that feels like having a nice long talk.
That would be great. Except I wish you could dangle with me. We could watch monkeys play around and protect each other from toucans.
I don't think toucans will ever bother ye, Shlomo.
They are waiting for their chance. We must be vigilant.
I find her on the east side of the house, dangling upside down from a juniper branch and smiling at me. All out of leaves, then?
Yes, I ate them all.
Ready to go home now?
I am. It will be both happy and sad at the same time, though. The word for that in Slothian is dolofabolo. Do you have a human word for it?
Oh, aye. Lots of words in lots of languages. The word for it in English is bittersweet. Come on, then. Hop on me back. I'm gonna give ye some juice to move fast.
Going home will be bittersweet.
Slow-mo says as she drops onto me back and wraps her arms around me neck. Dolofabolo, love.
I hope you don't misunderstand me, Oaken. I really like seeing new things, and I want to see more, but I also need to rest and recharge with familiar things.
I understand completely, I say, as I begin an easy jog to the bound tree located in our back acreage. There's so much I want to see, too. But you can't just go all the time without a break. You need a quiet place to retreat and chew on life and take time to digest it.
Yes, that's it exactly.
Shall we make a habit of taking little trips like this, going somewhere new for a day and then coming home to talk it over with a tree?
Yes, now that I know there is a great big, huge world outside the jungle. I want to see it all, but in small doses, please, and on oaken back like this.
Ah, you like riding oaken back, eh?
I do. I can see things, and you move at half the speed of a monkey, which is still super fast to me, but not too fast.
When we shift back into the Amazon basin, the humidity smacks me face like a wet herring and just sticks there. Slow-mo cries in relief.
That's more like it.
And then she barfs on me shoulder. Its heat and consistency are much like the Amazonian atmosphere. But I tell myself that this time she tried to vomit affectionately. Or maybe it's my own affection that I'm projecting. Methinks I truly needed to meet her. This wonder she has for the world has reawakened me own. It's what the Grove of Apprentices feels every day. And that's something I need to encourage. The danger of growing old is growing comfortable and complacent at the same time. We should seek out the new and strange and applaud it and throw wild feckin' parties whenever it walks into our lives. We should be building roads in and out of our own wee heads rather than erecting walls around them. And I had to be thrown forward 2,000 years into the future to understand this. To have no retreat available to me before I saw what a dark mental well I had dug for myself. I was lucky to have Shia Han lower down a rope to fetch me out. but I'd wager that a few billion people are in dark places like that, and they're not even trying to escape. They're both snug and smug and content to stunt the growth of their own spirits. I'll be a bucket of beaver snot before I let myself shrink into the space of a small mind again. I don't want that for myself or my growth. These new druids are going to learn how big Gaia truly is, that she's here for us all, and we should be there for all of her. We head north from the boundary until Slow-Mo points to what she calls
an ideal dangle.
I can't see what makes it better than any other tree around, but that's why she's the expert. I make sure she has enough energy to climb it quickly and get herself situated, and then I promise I'll see her in a few days.
What if I change trees?
Is that likely?
Not really, no.
Then I'll find ye. Don't worry. I'm going to see the world with that sloth, and I will love Greta and teach me apprentices and apply the second law of Owen wherever I can. So that's me road ahead all settled. I might even wind up knowing Jack Shite someday. Shere Han said Ragnarok could well be the end of the world. But I'm right glad he cocked that one up. If anything, it feels like a new beginning.
Epilogue. One of the great gifts that talking hounds give to druids is that they don't allow you to drown yourself in alcohol. I know this because I tried to do it a few days later. After I bought a 12-pack and drank 4 beers in the span of a few minutes, Oberon ran away with the rest of the pack in his mouth and tossed the box over the cliff I was lounging on at Okehampton Bay. The bottles smashed on the rocks below.
Oberon, what the hell were you thinking? Remember Bingo the Beagle, Atticus? He was worried about Douglas drinking so much, and he had to save his human. I'm just doing the same thing here. Plus, I'm worried about your bladder. It's so tiny, he said. Well, that glass is gonna hurt a fish or an anemone or something. Glass? Let's pause for a moment to remember one of the greatest rhetorical questions ever asked. The one John McClane posed in Die Hard. Who gives a shit about glass? What you should be worried about right now is your state of mind. You should be doing something to relax, besides exploding your bladder. Yoga, or bubble baths, or recreational wombat chasing?
Starbuck picked up on that and turned in tight circles of excitement, shouting,
Yes, wombats!
Oberon.
If you would just chase them with me, Atticus, you would see how relaxing it is. Every time I'm closing in on a wombat, I'm thinking how incredibly relaxed I feel.
Oberon, I don't want to hear it.
Fine. Then hear this. You still have 2 jobs.
I don't have any jobs. I'm invested in a solar company with Suluk Black that will keep me flush forever.
Wrong! You have 2 jobs. Feed me and heal Tasmanian devils, which means feed me and serve Gaia. And by feed me, I mean give me whatever I want. And since we're traveling around the countryside a lot looking for devils to heal, I want you to buy me a thermos and keep it filled with hot sausage gravy. Well, I know people don't normally think of gravy as a thirst quencher, but it totally is. Gravy is both hydrating and fortifying, and professional athletes chug it during timeouts.
No, they don't.
They will soon. They just haven't caught up with the science yet, because it's difficult to achieve the right consistency for chugging. No, I mean the right viscosity. That's the word. Viscositists are working on it right now, and I deserve a gravy thermos for telling you.
Viscositists? That's not even a word.
Viscositologists, then.
My diaphragm heaves in quick succession, and I realize belatedly that I'm laughing. And once my slow-moving thoughts catch up, and I hear both made-up words in my head, and how silly they are, I laugh louder. And soon it's out of control. I've given up trying to stay upright, and both Oberon and Starbuck swoop in to lick my face and keep it going. It doesn't remove even a smidgen of my anguish, but it does remind me that there are other emotions to feel, and I could stand to enjoy a dollop of joy in my dolor. He's right about my jobs. Regardless of how miserable I feel, I do need to feed my hounds and serve Gaia. Perhaps focusing on them will pull me through to a better place. Once I wind down from the laugh and attempt to give them both some scritches, one at a time, the two dogs snuggle up against me on that clifftop for a serious nap.
In Tir na n'Og, you'd have your arm back.
A voice whispers in my head.
Morgan?
The chooser of the slain materializes in front of me, seated nude in a pub with a tall glass of dark brew in front of her. I'm seated across from her, also have a glass, and am also lacking a shred of clothing. Everyone else in the establishment is dressed, but not paying any attention to us. It's going to be one of those dreams. Now that she's materialized, she speaks aloud instead of whispering in my head.
The beer is great there, too, Sheehan. Govnew, make sure of that. The stresses of life, its cares and worries, are all gone.
Well, yeah. Because what you're talking about is me being dead, right? You're talking about Tir na n'Og as an afterlife, not the plane I pass through while I'm shifting.
Yes. And it's quite the party here now. Munanin and Fand have arrived, and three Yeti, and so many more. It's certainly superior to your current situation.
I reach out to my dream pint with my dream arm and take a delicious swallow. I don't currently have any good beer, or a right arm, that's correct. But I'm not ready to agree that having those things make death a better deal than life.
You're tremendously unhappy.
That's true. I'm depressed, and heartbroken, and racked by guilt ferrets. But I'm not longing for death as an alternative.
Why not? You've had a good run, as the mortals say.
I've had a long run, certainly. But I don't think I can qualify it as a good one. I was hiding for most of it, fighting for my life for the rest of it, and I made plenty of bad decisions along the way. I'd like to try being good for a while, genuinely good for Gaia, build up some karma points. The Morgan's eyes flashed red for the briefest second.
Karma is not a concept applied to Irish lives. I will not be judging you when you part the veil, nor will anyone. You know this.
I do know that. But in judging myself, I'd like to provide some balance to my life before I give it up. Morgan smirked at first, and tried to hide it by putting her glass up to her lips. But then it turned into a full smile and a chuckle, and she gave up, placing the glass back down.
Do you know why I adore you, Sheehan?
I don't, actually. It's a mystery.
You often see the good you do as bad, and just as often make terrible decisions in service to what you think is good. You are so wonderfully damaged.
The same could be said for the Morgan, but I didn't think it politic to say so aloud. Ah, and you think you can fix me up?
Why would I want to fix you? I like you this way.
Well, thanks, I guess. Despite your acceptance of my many flaws, I'd like to work on some things for a while. And may I ask, why are we naked? The Morgan snorted and waved a dismissive hand.
I think it better to ask why these people are dressed. You have spent too long in the company of prudish mortals.
That's a fair question. You're probably right.
I'm right about a great many things. He would be happier with us in Tir na n'Og, with me.
I nodded to buy myself some time to choose my words carefully. Most likely. But I don't feel I deserve such happiness yet. Let us stay in touch. Perhaps through these strange dreams you've visited me with a couple times now. Let us drink many more of these fabulous dream pints together, naked, in front of a congregation of strangers. In the waking hours, I'll continue to observe the rites as I always have, of course, but those are one-sided affairs, not ideal for conversation. If you wish us to have a relationship deeper than what we've had thus far, then let us have a proper courtship. Perhaps something will grow from that.
And if it doesn't?
Well then, I suppose it doesn't. We still get to have fun together in the meantime. The thing is, Morgan, I need some time. If I may, please forgive me as I'm still processing quite a bit of this and sort of thinking aloud here. Before you decided to face both Artemis and Diana in combat, you thought about it for a good while, yes? It wasn't an impulse of the moment.
No. Or yes, to be clear, my exit was planned. I had considered it for centuries.
Centuries? Huh? Then consider that I've only begun to consider it in the past few days. I need to think it through, set my many affairs in order, and perhaps write it all down. You know what the catalyst was that brought us here to this moment in this dream? The day you flew into my shop in Tempe and told me that Angus Og had found me. The Morgan tilted her head, her eyes edging toward red.
Is this blame?
No, not a shred of blame. It's mere recognition of cause and effect. If there's any blame to be cast, be assured I'll cast it on myself. I am simply saying that I need time. There will be time, yes. I beg your pardon, but might you be familiar with the poet T.S. Eliot?
No. Was he Irish?
Alas, he was not. The British and the Americans both claim him, but our conversation reminded me of one of his poems, where he said there would be time. Time for you, and time for me. And time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions, before the taking of a toast and tea. After all, you had thousands of years beyond mine to consider. Am I correct?
I do hope, Sheahan, that you are not asking me to specify my age.
No. Merely confirming that you lived longer than me, which should be obvious.
Yes.
That being given, I hope you will understand I need a while to think this over. And it may be a good long while, just as you took a long while to make your decision.
I do understand that, Sheahan. I respect it and will do my best to be patient. But perhaps you are forgetting something. You have no reason to fear death. There is only pleasure awaiting you in Tir na n'Og. That is something I can guarantee.
You can?
Yes, of course. Sheahan, I love you.
Perhaps at another time her plain speaking would have affected me differently. But after dwelling on the many manifest flaws that had caused me to be maimed and alone, I could not fathom how that could possibly be true. Gods below, Morgan, why? She shifted in her seat and fidgeted with her beer glass.
As one of the gods below that you just invoked, allow me to have my reasons. I am not accustomed to sharing such sentiments.
I understand, and withdraw the question.
Is your reluctance because of Granuaile?
She held up a hand to forestall an early reply.
I am not jealous of her, and have never been. I ask merely for information.
I sighed. Perhaps that's a part of it, but it is by no means the sum. I have amends to make, regrets I must own, and many seasons of peace I must sow and harvest. One day, I hope anyway,
We will feel the sadness peel away from our past and stand justified, knowing we could not, as imperfect beings, have made any other choices than the ones that haunt us in this moment. I know intellectually that this must be true, but my heart is incapable of feeling it right now. With sufficient time and the daily practice of kindness, I hope to stroll some day into that soft green glen where I can finally be free of my own wretched self. That's gonna be a victory like nothing I've ever felt. And I want to make it to that space and live there a while. And I know that you will say I could spend that time in Tir na n'Og. But here I can spend that necessary time and still do some good for Gaia. The Morrigan nodded slowly.
I too have much to work on. This suits me well. So I will wait. And we will, as you say, visit and drink and court.
The strangers dissolved into mist, and the Morrigan melted into shadow. I woke up from my nap without an arm or a beer, and with the same hollow dread for the future. But I got up and told the hounds it was time for me to get back to work. I turned away from the ocean, intending to walk inland some distance before contacting the elemental about where to find the next den of Tasmanian devils, only to find a woman standing perhaps 50 yards away, clearly waiting for me. I did not immediately recognize her. She appeared middle-aged, had tawny brown skin, and wore a navy blue dress, modestly cut, with a white headscarf to shield her from the sun. A pleasant smile on her face welcomed me as I approached, but she wasn't going to call out until I drew near. One could tell by her bearing that she was not the sort to raise her voice. She had her hands clasped loosely in front of her, and from her fingers dangled an ivory envelope.
"Hello, Shiahan,"
she said once I was close enough to hear at a normal volume.
"Do you know me?"
"I don't recognize you, sorry," I replied, shaking my head.
"I look different now."
Her brown eyes gleamed above a generous nose, and there were laugh lines at the corners of her eyes.
"The last time you saw me was in Arizona, and I was white because I manifested from the mind of Katie McDonough. I blessed some arrows for you."
That could be only one person.
"Mary?"
She beamed at me.
"You do remember?"
"Of course. It's wonderful to see you again. I hope nothing is wrong."
"Oh, no, child. All is well, and Katie sends her love. I've come to give you a message from my son. A letter, in fact."
"Jesus wrote me a letter?"
"Yes. I thought it was a bit eccentric, for we haven't so much as a book of stamps in heaven, never mind the postal service. But he likes to keep us guessing, you know."
She held out the letter to me, and I took it. He does have a reputation for that.
"Thank you." "Quite welcome, my child. I shall leave you to it. He's not expecting a reply, and there are some people in town who require my attention. But I am so glad to see you safe. Peace be with you."
"And also with you, Mary." I looked at the envelope, which bore my name on it without an address.
"Ha! He wrote it in red ink?"
Mary tittered.
"He thought it was funny and said you might appreciate the joke."
"I do. Please give him my best regards."
"I will. Farewell."
She turned toward town, headscarf billowing gently in an afternoon breeze, and I turned my attention to the letter. There was a wax seal on the back in red, imprinted with the silhouette of a dove in flight. I pried open the seal, unfolded a single sheet, and began to read.
"Dear Sheehan, welcome to one of the timelines in which you survived. If you're wondering if there's one in which you're happy right now, the answer is no. You are universally miserable, and this is the moment where I could say I told you so. But we're friends, and I wish to remain your friend. Instead, since you did not heed my advice earlier, I hope you'll heed it now. Live in peace. Do not
pick up a sword again, and Harmony will find you. By the way, your fly is open. It was totally open in front of my mom. And yes, she saw. Yours in joy and whiskey. Jesus. I looked down to confirm, and yes, indeed, my fly was open. Oh, crap. I hurriedly zipped it and looked up at the sky. Sorry, I mumbled, then flapped the letter a couple of times in the air. And thanks for the advice. I'm ready to listen now, and I will live in peace, if I don't die of embarrassment first. Oberon, alert as ever, did not miss an opportunity to tease me.
Hey, Atticus. Remember that time you flashed your junk at the Mother of God? That was just now, actually, but I didn't want you to forget.
The very last epilogue. A week after the Morgans' visitation and my mortifying faux pas in front of Mary, I sat under a swamp gum eucalyptus with Oberon and Starbuck, taking a modest lunch break from healing Tasmanian devils. Without my healing Triskele tattoo, it took a while longer to do the first healing, because I had to craft the bindings freeform. But once I created a macro for it, the process worked just fine with Tasmania's help. We'd finished our salami and crackers, and I was giving Oberon a lazy, distracted belly rub.
I know this is gonna sound selfish, Atticus, but I really miss your other hand. Belly rubs aren't quite the same.
I'm sorry, buddy.
There has to be something we can do to fix it. Hey, wait!
My hound rolled over and sat up, his tail wagging, excited about whatever had just occurred to him. Starbuck leapt to his feet and crouched in case Oberon was ready to play.
Atticus, what about that guy who owes you favors?
Which guy, Oberon?
I remember you told me some stories 2 centuries ago around the fire. It was when Clever Girl was in her training period, I think. There was some pretty good stew, I recall, once you got rid of the carrots. But anyway, you told us a story about this god who wanted you to fetch some stuff out of a library, but you wound up stealing a book full of some really loud cat sex. And another time, that same god had you fetch a magic cauldron from a naughty necromancer in Wales. Oh, you mean Agma? Yeah, that's who I mean. You said he would owe you a pretty big favor for both of those things, right?
Yes, that's right.
Well, it's time to call in those favors, don't you think? I mean, when were you planning on using those? They didn't go bad, did they? Like a cheesesteak left out in the sun? That would be so sad. I'm getting very sad just thinking about it. Why do people abandon their cheesesteaks, Atticus? Why? Do they not have stomachs? Or taste buds? Or what? Help me understand!
He tilted back his head to howl mournfully, and Starbuck joined in, albeit in a much higher register. Oberon, please! You made a good point, and then you got sidetracked. I can't explain wanton cheesesteak abuse any more than I can explain why some people watch other people fishing on television. Those are inexplicable mysteries. But Agma's favors do deserve some consideration. I put my life in jeopardy both times. That means they're pretty big favors.
And that means I deserve a pretty big snack, right? Like a whale or something?
Whales are not snacks, Oberon.
That was merely a suggestion based on the size of the favor I just did you. It's okay if you don't give me a whale, but you can substitute a herd of cattle or buy me my own chicken and waffle restaurant. It would be called Oberon's Chicken and Waffles, because all the chicken and waffles would in fact be mine.
Well, let's see how it works out first. Let me think about this. I called to the Morgan that night, wondering if she would be willing to grant the favor. Her breathy whisper sounded pleased at first.
Sheehan, I didn't expect to hear from you again so soon.
I admit that I was hoping to get your help with a couple of favors that Agma owes me.
I don't understand. You want me to repay favors that Ogma owes you, or force Ogma to grant you the favors he owes?
Neither. One of the favors requires him to find Miach, who was slain by his father, Dienkecht, and learn from him how he performed the feat for which he is still famous.
I think I see. You are asking a favor of me so that Ogma can perform a favor for you.
I'm not exactly asking in the binding contractual sense. I'm wondering if you'll do this for me without expecting to be paid later.
Why would I do that?
Because it would demonstrate to me that you can behave in ways to which you're unaccustomed. It would be proof of your personal growth.
Perhaps it would demonstrate that, or perhaps you are using my professed feelings against me to your advantage, manipulating me.
Perhaps. But you don't have to continue to think of every transaction or exchange as having a winner and a loser.
I only think of it that way because it's true.
It's not true. If you want to build a relationship based on trust with someone, both people can and should win.
Is that so? How would I win in this case?
I would be grateful and think of you fondly.
Are you saying you would love me?
No, that's not what I said. But believing you will do something for me without payment in kind, that's a big step along that path. It's crucial, in fact.
And have you ever done something like that for me?
I have worshipped you and observed your rites for more than 2,000 years. I have prayed to you, honored you, and I took you to a baseball game once just to enjoy your company. Bought you a cute baseball cap and everything.
Ah, yes, I remember. The despair in the dugout was delicious. Very well. Have Ogma call me when he is ready, and I will take him to the shade of Miach, expecting no favor in return.
That's very kind, and I appreciate it. Getting Ogma to visit me took several days of prayer and calling upon him and relayed requests through elementals. He hadn't participated in the fighting of Ragnarok, being one of the gods Briad had decided to sequester, and he was not anxious to return from wherever he was. He appeared to be in a poor mood when he arrived. The hounds and I were finishing up an early dinner on the beach of the Mayfield Bay Conservation Area when he emerged from the eucalyptus forest. The undersides of clouds were lit in orange and magenta and bruised with purple higher up as the sun set. He pointedly crossed his arms, something I could no longer do. "Hello, Ogma. I once retrieved the Dagda's cauldron for you and raided the library at Alexandria, both for favors to be named later."
"I'm aware. This is quite a bit later."
"The favors had no expiration dates. I'm ready to call them in now."
"I assumed as much. What are they?"
"First, I'd like you to contact the Morrigan and have her lead you to the shade of Miach, who healed the arm of Nuada, and learn from him how it was done."
"That's more than one favor."
"It's only one. Learn from Miach how he healed Nuada. I'm only suggesting you contact the Morrigan because you'll find him faster that way, and she's already agreed to do this."
"And if he refuses to teach me?"
"You keep trying until he does, of course. Though I will note that the Morrigan can be very persuasive when she wishes." Ogma grunted, looking at my stump.
"I think I already know what the second favor is."
"Yes. Heal me the way Mia healed Nuada. Regrow flesh and bone so that I can be whole again and get my binding to the earth restored." The god's lip curled in a snarl.
"You'd better not ask me to complete that binding."
"I won't. I plan to ask Briat to restore my bindings, should I be so fortunate to possess an arm again. She had said she would grant me a boon."
"Why are you even bothering? You've done enough. Grunuel and Owen will make sure druidry endures. Go to Tir na'an Og and take your rest."
"I've lost a lot, Ogma, but not my will to live. Nor did I lose my sense of responsibility. I still have plenty of work to do on Gaia's behalf. and I had a bet with Owen that I wanted to win. Ogma hawked up something gross from his throat and spat it on the beach, a non-verbal hint at what he thought of my reply.
"This'll take some time, if it can be done at all. Where will you be?"
"Somewhere on the island. I obviously won't be shifting around any time soon. You can ask Tasmania where I am." The god grimaced as if he'd just swallowed a mouthful of sour milk, but didn't say anything else. He couldn't simply kill me to make the problem go away, not without severe consequences. Dropping the Morrigan's name ensured that, and refusing the attempt or claiming it was impossible was equally unworkable. I've often thought the economy of favors to be named later is the shadow economy by which history is funded. Nothing important would get done without such favors. He muttered a farewell and departed, and I didn't know if I'd see him again next week or next month or next year or indeed ever again. The same could be said, I supposed, for Granuel. There was no guarantee that anything would work out. But at least I had some small hope of healing, and a better hope of learning how to live differently, without having to hide from the Fae or the gods of various pantheons anymore. And in the darkness of time that stretched before me, I saw a small, winking light that could be forgiveness. Perhaps it would be others forgiving me my trespasses, or me forgiving myself. I hoped I could make it there, regardless, to let it shine on me. In the meantime, there was an entire planet to nurture, and a couple of hounds who hadn't forgotten that I promised them a romp on the beach after dinner. And I realized with a start that there was no longer any reason for me to hang on to my American accent. I shed it and returned to my old Irish one, and it was like wrapping myself in a favorite blanket. "What do you say, hounds of mine? Ready for some sand and surf before we settle down for the night?" Oberon and Starbuck didn't wait but immediately took off toward the wet sand in the day's last light, tongues flapping in the salty air like pink pennants. Oberon's mental voice floated back to me, taunting. "Last one to the waters, an old druid!" I grinned as I chased them onto the beach. "Yes? I am an old druid, and I plan on getting much older. I have many, many years to go before I see my final sunset."
This is Luke Daniels. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Scourged by Kevin Hearn. This program was produced by Dan Zitt. Text copyright 2018 by Kevin Hearn. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.